Hello, everyone, and welcome to Heard on the Street, Street Fights podcast, where we uncover the stories behind the companies, and more importantly, the people that constitute this sector of media and advertising that we all call local. So where are they from? What makes them tick? What business and life lessons can we draw from that? So I'm Mike Boland, lead analyst at Street Fight, and our guest today is Jeff White, founder and CEO of Gravy Analytics, which is an innovator in location intelligence for local marketing. And before that, Jeff has had an established career in different parts of the digital marketing stack. So we talked to Jeff from our studio in San Francisco about that journey, what he's learned from it, and what we can all take away from that. So here's our discussion with Jeff White. So, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So we have a lot to talk about, including kind of a deeper dive on all those things I just mentioned. But first, let's start with the present. So tell us a little bit about yourself and about Gravy Analytics for those unfamiliar.
Oh, absolutely. So Gravy Analytics founded in 2011, Mike. And really, the thesis behind Gravy Analytics is the next frontier of really understanding consumer behaviors is where we go and what we do. And if we can able to understand that, then it unlocks a lot of use cases.
Yeah, that's great. I think there's like a saying I've always been bouncing around in my head for a long time and being a local analyst, which is, you know, you are where you go. And as like a signal for kind of whether it be targeting for different flavors of marketing or for attribution. I think it's an important to kind of like measure that signal. So we're going to actually get into a lot of that, you know, the how you guys do that, I think is important. You guys differentiate with kind of an event-based approach and lots of kind of interesting technology. But before we go there, as we like to do on this show, let's start kind of at the beginning and work our way back. So let's talk about like how you got into this and like the path that brought you into this world of digital media and advertising. So, you know, how did your career kind of start off with all of this?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think, you know, you've heard me say this before, I believe, which is never confuse a clear vision with a short distance. And I think in this case, Mike, I'm not even sure I had a real clear vision. I just knew that this is 2011, and I know it's patently obvious now, but just believe that mobile phone location data was just going to be a place I wanted to play in. And really, advertising wasn't really even one of the use cases that I was most interested in to start with. It was just understanding behaviorally how people live their lives in an aggregated and anonymized way, and just learning from that. And wasn't sure exactly where that was going to lead. But that was the thesis, is that it's just going to be the next frontier. My previous businesses were all in front of emerging spaces where there were a lot of tech dislocations. So I just wanted to go there and let the tech lead me.
Yeah, and let's talk a little bit about some of those businesses that preceded Gravy Analytics. But first, you bring up a good point about that like kind of 2011 timeframe. And like it's kind of almost always forgotten, the time frame of like the iPhone came out in 2007. It wasn't until 2008 till we had an actual app store. And then it wasn't until a few years later that we started to see kind of killer apps emerge. Like in a location sense or in a local sense, we saw kind of Foursquare circa 2009 and 10. But really the kind of the ad ecosystem around mobile advertising that is now kind of humming along was really unclear even in that time period, even like 3 or 4 years after that 2007 iPhone launch, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, 2011, as you said, the App Store was still a baby.
Yeah.
And I can't even recall where Google was at the time, but I don't even believe the Android was even really on the map.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know that either. That's something we can look up after. That's the kind of thing that if you have a podcast, which we aspire to get to, where you have like a separate booth with a producer that's feeding you facts like that, we're not there yet. But anyway, so yeah, let's kind of go back further, like what predated Gravy in terms of some of your, you know, we like to talk about career lessons, career paths, that kind of stuff. I mean, you had actually a few different interesting kind of threads, and one of which being, I think that you had a few exits that you actually went through, and I think there's probably some good learnings we can draw from there. I mean, you were at Blue Canopy and Govee Win. Tell us a little bit about kind of that backstory before we kind of dive deeper into Gravy.
You bet, Mike. So I think in every case, one common thematic to all the businesses that I started was really problems that I was living through. And at the time when I was running software development for AT&T and others, we were struggling to manage our outsourced and offshore environments, trying to get stuff done. We weren't really, frankly, very good at even managing the next cube over, much less the next continent. And so what I saw was these large ecosystems of EDSs, the IBMs, the Accentures of the world really coming into that space. They were my vendors, but I needed help managing them. So that was the genesis behind Blue Canopy. We launched a whole platform, a bunch of tech, took a bunch of pages out of Toyota supply chain, and really just trying to bring an instrument visibility into development environments, largely offshore development environments. And it just took off. We won a couple Inc. awards, fastest growing company in America. Our lowest growth rate year was like 98%, and sold it to a private equity firm in 2007. And just to complete that story, what was keeping me up at night when I was running Blue Canopy there at the end was I had my own supply chain issues, which was I had some resources, contract resources and others that were waiting to be deployed onto customer sites that, for a variety of reasons, contractual delays and others, were on the bench costing me money. And then on the back end of my supply chain, I had a bunch of uses for subcontract labor to do discrete things for us that I couldn't find good subcontractors in a frictionless way, if you will. So I was like, this is really problematic. And one of my Inc. awards, I met Meg Whitman, who was leaving eBay and done with all that at the time. And she's like, you effectively have the same problem we had with people selling stuff to people. We created the platform to remove that friction. And it just, she'd helped me trigger in my head. It's like, we could launch a platform, what became GovWin, to remove subcontract friction, people exposing and getting access to supply. Long story short, within 6 months, we had like 6,000 companies signed on to the platform. And then a year later, sold it to a publicly traded company called Deltek.
Well, what I love about that is that predates by probably a decade or more the subsequent and eventual kind of on-demand movement, on-demand economy, where a lot of the benefits were kind of finding liquidity in supply and kind of, that kind of marketplace model of just kind of squeezing value out of like available time, available, some of these kind of currencies in that on-demand economy. You were kind of living out those principles much before it kind of became a thing.
Yeah, the story of my life, Mike. I'm too early or too late. There you
Right, there you go.
go.
Now, so a lot of other kind of flags went up as you were talking too, in terms of like some of the interesting things like we like to talk about on this show, which is what I like to call cross training. So the different things that executives do, whether they go into these different roles because they have these skill sets, or along the way they are kind of cultivating these skill sets, but either way, it kind of creates this unique mosaic of talents and skills, for each individual executive that's kind of a function of these different kind of, function of their resume. And we're talking like things, technical, managerial, strategic, all of these just kind of things that make a kind of rounded executive. So how does that mix kind of look for you?
I'm still figuring it out. frankly, I'm always amazed at what I don't know. For me, when I got started in my career, I always knew I wanted to be a CEO. So I did the traditional path to go get experience in operations and sales and marketing and finance. And what I've always found myself is, and continually reminding myself, I'm really not good with the details. I'm good when the canvas is blank. I'm a good idea guy. I can look forward and bring a vision. But I need to surround myself with people who are good at operational detail execution. And that frees me up to do the things I'm good at. Early on, it was hard for me to admit that. But I've learned that, admitting you're what you're not good at and shoring that up is actually a strength in and of itself.
Well, I think so. It's two things I think key there, which are one, self-awareness, to delegation and ability to delegate. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
So actually, what we're going to do now is we're going to pause for a commercial break. When we come back, more from Jeff White. Hi everyone, it's Mike Bullen, lead analyst at Street Fight, here to tell you about Brandify Summit, which is an event for brands that want to succeed in local. It's hosted by Brandify, which is Street Fight's owner, and it's an industry-leading provider of location-based digital marketing for brands to connect with their customers. So the event will take place in LA September 17th through 19th at the Intercontinental, which I'm told is the tallest building in town. And this year's theme is Building the Next Generation of Local, and it'll feature interactions with top influencers in local, as well as an A-list program that's really coming together with speakers from Amazon and Google and Microsoft and several others. So we hope to see you there, and you can find out more at BrandifySummit.com. So we're back. My guest is Jeff White. So Jeff, before the break, we were talking about some of the things that kind of led up to Gravy's founding. So let's pick it up there, like kind of some of the early days of Gravy. We love to talk to startup founders or founders of any size companies about like what those early days were like, because they're typically kind of filled with lots of kind of great anecdotes and learnings in terms of just typical early stage foundings, you know, growth and scaling or kind of building a team and all that stuff. So how would you characterize those kind of early days and some of the learnings?
Sure. So as you know, I had done it before, so I had some experience and some expectations. And I always find it far more interesting, Mike, to talk about what went wrong all the mistakes I made, because I made many. But you know, to the one self, you know, to thine own self be true. We actually started out as a consumer-based application. And a long story short, realized that that's really not in my DNA. But we started with an event discovery app, because when I looked at the landscape, one of my favorite strategy books of all time really is Blue Ocean Strategy. Mm-hmm. And it's really based on the principle of find oceans that aren't filled with a lot of competition and hyper competitive entry. And so we looked at what Google and at the time AOL and Yahoo and others were doing, and no one had really done very well in the event discovery space. Heck, I would argue still no one's done that really well.
Yeah.
And anchored there, we were like, you know, this is a big problem. We looked at how many people were searching Google for things to do and all these other things, and said, you know, we can tackle that leveraging mobile location and surface interesting and relevant things for people to engage with that's also really close to where they are or where they're going to be. And really that was our start, Mike. We were going to, you know, kick Facebook's butt, conquer the world, and go. What we realized is that was not in our DNA.
Yeah. Well, Facebook still isn't able to do events well. And one of their most recent kind of local, I mean, just in general, as you know, in local, they're kind of a sleeping giant, but just haven't been able to pull it off. But one of their most recent product launches was something built around events. And it's interesting too, the kind of the pivot that you describe. Not only I think is that emblematic of startups in just kind of being that heat seeking missile that always has to kind of adjust, and the strong companies do adjust. It also in a broader sense reminds me, or is at least analogous to what kind of Foursquare did, starting as a consumer play and quite a successful one, but eventually finding more of a B2B focus and being a data play. So it seems like there's some parallels there, at least.
You know, I've always found it interesting tension, like, because as you know, an entrepreneur, they always say you got to be gritty, you got to be tough. The world's going to kick you in the teeth, and you just got to keep going, persevere, persevere, persevere. But sometimes that comes at the expense of having a vision that's blinding.
Yeah.
So you can't, to your point, you can't not take your head up and realize, oh, we may be off course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, when it happens, in retrospect, whenever there are successful pivots in kind of like the business and technology lore, it's easy to look at them and they're brilliant. But you know, when they happen, of course, it's so difficult to first see that it's the right direction, but then also to execute on it when it was
right.
A vision that you may have had that was deeply embedded, but also kind of steer an entire team towards that other direction. I can't imagine that's easy.
Well, not only that, but the makeup of the team may not be constructed to execute on what the vision is.
Yep. There we go. So a lot of hard decisions and a lot of levels to that. So another kind of topic we always like to talk about when we're talking about early stage challenges is venture funding. So Gravy has received a few rounds of funding from various types of firms and also at various stages. I shouldn't just peg it as just venture. But regardless, outside institutional funding, what are kind of some of your learnings from that process, and what advice do you have for early stage entrepreneurs that are seeking outside funding?
Yeah, it's a good question. So my first company, I bootstrapped myself, and learned a ton about that and hard knocks of finance. The second one was such a quick run while I had some angels and quasi institutional. It was 18 months beginning to end. So this one, full fledged VC backed. My VC partner is Spring Lake. And I'll tell you, I've raised money on the West Coast, East Coast. Geography matters. There is a bias, good or bad, in terms of the markets and the communities that exist. East Coast is very much economic driven, defensible models, whereas, in West Coast, the stereotype exists for what it is. It's innovation, disruption. Big ideas matter.
Now, is that because of the kind of investing culture that's geographically distributed, or is it because of the, types of verticals and industries we're talking about where, West Coast, it tends to sometimes be software or things that are harder to put a traditional valuation behind, or a little bit of both?
I wish I had a good answer. I have some theories, but I know, like, even in the geography where I am, which is near Washington, D.C., I mean, there are two dominant, really, industries here. One is the government, and that influences a whole way of thinking, and it frankly blots out the sun in many cases here. But the other one also is, we've had a strong telco and biomed backgrounds
Sure. Or
here, which influences.
even tech like AOL and online and commercial internet stuff as well, right?
Well, AOL was interesting because I did a lot of work there, and a lot of my team came from there. It was almost an anomaly in this area, and it had a lot of telco roots to it as an ISP,
Sure, there you go.
which probably strengthens its roots here. But it was an anomaly here in terms of the internet and the internet players that exist. But it sprung a lot of mini ecosystem of both entrepreneurs, businesses, execs, probably. Three people on my executive team are all people that came out of AOL, including myself with my background. So it's just different. And I always tell entrepreneurs who are trying to raise money is A, your equity partner, your backers is like a marriage. So you better darn sure that you're happy with them.
Oh, absolutely. Now, those are great pieces of advice. Now, moving on in the timeline of Gravy, closer to kind of the present, the business is building, becoming more established. What are some of the things kind of like up till today that you're doing and thinking and seeing in terms of how you're positioning the product, how you're differentiating? We got into a little bit of that, how a lot of it is kind of event-based data. But tell us a little bit about the current iteration of the company and the product.
Sure. So at its core, we have a co-op of location data partners. These are everything from large media companies, app developers, exchanges, and others that contribute to something we call the GeoSignals Cloud. And it's really a true give-to-get co-op where people contribute. And our core contribution in that is mobile devices and its associated locations. And it's all anonymized and
Oh, of
everything. And
course.
we aggregate them all. So there's no PII data or anything like that.
Sure.
But effectively, we take all those things together, synthesize them all, and for our co-op partners, cleanse, enrich, and validate, corroborate against all of our variety of sources, append with a bunch of analytics what we know about those devices throughout our platform,
Yep, that's
and give
key.
it back. And we give it, and we do all that for free. The only thing that we ask is full writes and reuse to create aggregated analytics against the entire data set that we see.
Yeah, that's great. It seems like the parts of the boxes you need to check for location accuracy, it sounds like you're doing that in terms of the cleansing, but also the sources. I think that that's something that's sometimes forgotten, that you know, one of the kind of key dynamics in getting good location data is that initial app layer opt-in from the user, and that you have a higher propensity of getting that if you're talking about apps that are inherently location-based. You know, someone is going to agree to that opt-in if it's a weather app or if it's something that is inherently local, where it's just that value exchange for the user. So working with those types of sources, I think, tends to get a better kind of initial data set. So with that kind of backdrop, is, you know, what are kind of your sources, and can you kind of at least verbally kind of confirm that they're, you know, just a solid source of data along those lines?
You nailed it. I mean, those apps are clearly important sources for us, but even within those applications, Mike, in that ecosystem, you still see a lot of noise to signal.
Sure.
Even within those apps, and you're not to get too deep into the weeds, but
sure.
Just understanding, we've done this now down to the signal level, not just the device level, but down to the signal level, we're corroborating that and deriving its origination, because a signal with great precision can still be inaccurate because it's a Wi-Fi point or it's cell tower or another thing. So,
or there's latency, like that signal yesterday.
Yeah.
And so, these are mobile devices. They call mobile devices for a reason. They don't sit in the same place all the time.
Well, right. And really, that's where we found our position in the ecosystem. If we're able to help our partners discern value from that they couldn't do themselves, that's us. We don't want to be the app provider. We don't want to be the signal collector. We don't want to be the media company. We don't want to be a platform that delivers advertising. We just want to be intelligence around the location data.
Yeah, and that goes back to the metaphor earlier about being both self-aware and delegating. You're doing that on an industry level as being the part of the value chain that you can contribute the most value. It's
right.
Kind of a metaphor for where you kind of pinpointed your own skill sets as an executive earlier, doing at a company level, which is interesting. So we're going to actually now pause for another commercial break. When we come back, more from Jeff White. Hi everyone, it's Mike Bullen, lead analyst at Street Fight, here to tell you about Brandify Summit, which is an event for brands that want to succeed in local. It's hosted by Brandify, which is Street Fight's owner, and it's an industry-leading provider of location-based digital marketing for brands to connect with their customers. So the event will take place in LA, September 17th through 19th at the Intercontinental, which I'm told is the tallest building in town. And this year's theme is Building the Next Generation of Local, and it'll feature interactions with top influencers in local, as well as an A-list program that's really coming together with speakers from Amazon and Google and Microsoft and several others. So we hope to see you there, and you can find out more at BrandifySummit.com. So we're back. My guest is Jeff White. So Jeff, before the break, we were talking about lots of the learnings from your career and then also currently at Gravy, what you guys are working on. Now, one thing that we like to do on this show is give a more kind of deep, I guess, like picture of any given executive and the things they do on their free time, the things they do to unwind. I think that sometimes has lessons. It sometimes just kind of provides more perspective about kind of where you're at. And one of the things you do is kind of interesting. You're kind of involved in some what I'll call quasi farming, and let you describe the kind of context and everything. So what are you doing there?
Well, you're giving away one of our competitive trade secrets, Mike, because I have, amongst other things on my farm, chickens, and all the employees here get fresh raised eggs.
So it's like a retention. It's a retention tactic.
Exactly. No, I do. It's a. I have a little mini, what I call a farmette. I got about 10 or 12 goats, about 40 or 50 chickens, 9 dogs, 8 cats. And it keeps me sane from all the stress.
Yeah. I kind of grew up on a Christmas tree farm, and along with that, there was this whole ecosystem of animals and horses and all kinds of things that were just kind of along with that. And I can vouch for it's kind of like, I don't know, like spiritual calming kind of like a factor and effect that it can have. So actually, you got all those animals. Who gets to name them?
Well, you know, I try to stay away from that, having daughters,
Yeah, there you go.
who make fun of every time I try.
Yep.
So my daughters do it all. Then I actually, my youngest daughter does even all of the really hard work. She's out there collecting the eggs every morning
Yeah.
and feeding the animals. I just get to take credit for
Yeah, nice. Well, I
it.
mean, as a young child, and then my brothers and sisters, I was a little bit older. I was kind of managing the place, but either way, the kind of work ethic of that kind of thing, as opposed to like whatever else kids are doing these days, I think is like right there. That angle alone is probably kind of a worthwhile factor.
Indeed.
Yeah. So anyway, kind of along those lines, let's go into the lightning round.
Sure.
So kind of fairly quick answers. We're gonna kind of roll through them. What's a profession that you would want to have if you weren't doing what you do now?
Oh my gosh, I would love to be a football player, of course. You know, every kid's grew up, you know, being a football player or an astronaut or a cowboy, but realistically, I would love just to be part of the whole Tesla movement also. I just think renewable energy, I'm an environmental engineer by training, is important. So that would be fascinating to get involved in that industry.
Absolutely. And you probably saw that Elon Musk is looking to take Tesla private to kind of free up the kind of some of the short-term thinking that is kind of weighed upon companies in terms of like quarterly earnings. He's, with his typical kind of long-term view, wants to take the company private. I'm sure you saw some of that.
Oh yeah, well, and having sold my last company to a publicly traded company, I can appreciate
Yeah.
that.
And going public, of course, I don't want to kind of slam that because it makes sense in a lot of cases. And they initially did go public, but at his stage right now, I think he's right in probably thinking that some of the innovation that they need to achieve could better happen outside of the public markets. So moving on, what's a company or a tech startup that you think would be most exciting to be part of? And your answer could be Tesla.
Well, clearly, if you consider them a startup, it's funny. Somebody asked me one time, when do you stop calling yourself a
Yeah,
startup?
that's a good question. I've been using that loosely.
You know, and I said, it's like, well, maybe it's when your wife stops telling you to go get a real job. But people still call us a startup. And it's like, man, we've been around almost 8 years and people
Yeah.
still call us a startup. So, yeah, Tesla would be one I would probably pick off the top of my head just because of the idea that it's behind it. And that includes SpaceX too, as
Sure,
part of
there you
their.
go.
So it's a lot of frontier work to be done.
Absolutely. What's your favorite tech product or app that you use as a consumer?
Well, I have to say, Waze, being in the location space,
Nice.
and the democratization of what they did and how fast they did it, and then the exit they achieved. I mean, it's pretty phenomenal all around.
Yeah, and you mentioned, a lot of Gravy's kind of business is based on that kind of give some, get some co-op dynamic that is analogous to Waze's kind of consumer model of you use it as you're contributing, your own kind of spatial and location and velocity data, and then getting some back.
Right, that's absolutely right. I love it. Love
Yeah.
it.
So who's someone from the business world that you admire most?
Well, I just had mentioned Elon Musk, so I have to say him, but only because he's a big idea person, generally speaking. And I try to do that around here, which is if challenge everything, even at our own office. So don't ever assume just because things are the way they have to be. So a bunch of people around here are always challenging me, jerks. No, I'm kidding. But I think anybody really, who continuously pushes the boundaries of what is the norm, is who I look to.
Yeah. As someone who is getting into podcasts more and more, I'm also listening to a lot of podcasts, and I really like Reid Hoffman's Masters of Scale podcast. I don't know if you ever listened to it, but
No, I haven't.
one I'd recommend it, and one of his recent guests is Mark Pincus, formerly of Zynga. And I didn't know this about him, but one thing that he does or is famous for in kind of Silicon Valley lore is as an idea killer. In a good way. He has no kind of emotional attachment to ideas. And when something needs to be pivoted away from, he's your guy. So in terms of your thoughts about challenging everything, even these kind of deeply rooted things we have as ideas or structures around us in the business, to never be afraid to kind of challenge each thing. So I think that's it's a good lesson. So what superhero power would you most want to have?
Well, you know, is time travel one? Because that would be fascinating,
Yeah,
right?
we'll call it that, sure.
Yeah, so I would love to be able to go back in time. You imagine the, well, I don't know, maybe I would screw everything up,
Yeah, you got
but
to be careful about the space-time continuum.
yeah, right? Right. But yeah, that would be mine for sure.
I like that one. We've never gotten that one. So, lastly, what are some of your just kind of personal goals for 2018?
So we're at an interesting point in the company. We're growing up, if you will, and figuring out what we do as our next chapter, and looking to do some strategic moves in the marketplace. So that's what we're looking at. We're really starting to invest heavily now in ML and AI. I think our industry is really ripe for some rapid infusion of that, and what we can discern from this data. So, those are two big things for us. And really excited about not just the stuff we're working on today, but I think we've just scratched the surface on how to make true intelligence out of this thing called location.
Yeah, that's great. And you probably saw Apple's kind of now kind of whereas before their own mapping data was like a patchwork of different data sources, now they're going the Google route in actually getting kind of Street View cars out there and things like that to map the world. But as they're doing that, they're doing a different approach where it's more kind of 3D. They're getting 3D spatial maps, which has a lot of implications for augmented reality and the things I look at, but also just location data having that additional dimension of kind of, because you mentioned ML and AI, and I would add to that CV, computer vision. And I think that that's kind of exciting in terms of some of those things that are those emerging technologies that could come into play in the location intelligence space.
Well, I hope they pull it off, Mike. I would just be happy if Siri could find my keys, but
Yeah, there you go.
small steps.
Yeah, small steps, well said. Okay, that's all the time we have. I want to thank you, Jeff, for spending time with us.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yep, and thank you all for listening, and stay tuned for future episodes of Heard on the Street. You can find us on streetfightmag.com, and you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Also, stay tuned for lots more writings and multimedia from Street Fight, and don't forget that Brandify Summit is coming up. It'll be in LA, and really coming together with speakers from Google and Yelp and TripAdvisor and several others, and you can find out more at brandifysummit.com. So this has been Heard on the Street. I'm Mike Boland. Thanks for listening.